All right, it's 7 o'clock. Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know to it.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble says that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening, we are on step 4, part 1, resentments. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Jake and Steve. I'm going to read the first paragraph on bottom of page 63, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on each reading. Step 4 says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And Jake won the toss and has elected to go first.
Hi, my name is Jake McDonald. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jake.
My sobriety date is July 29th. 2015, and my home group is the Into Action Speaker Meeting, and we meet every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. out in Glebe Episcopal Church. So if you're out that way, come out and hear a speaker. Actually, Sharon from this home group will be speaking in February, beginning of February, so if you want to come hear a story, come out. Thanks for letting me come up here and speak for the opportunity for growth. So, step 4 in that paragraph, this was the first step that required me to really kind of do some homework, as they say. And before I even got to this step, you know, the first 3 steps, I felt like I got pretty well. I felt like I was moving along, And then I was really excited to do step four because I knew that this was going to be something very important for me to do. And I was really looking for, like, what am I supposed to do now? You know, well, most of the step work up until that point was me doing some reading, but a lot of it was my sponsor reading to me as well. And if there were words that he thought I might not understand, we'd look those words up. So this was the first step that I thought I was going to be able to take off with it and run. And that was actually quite the opposite. Because, and you know, there's a lot of good words in this paragraph, words like vigorous, vital, crucial, strenuous. So I didn't really know what I was getting myself into prior to actually getting to this step. And I dragged my feet quite a bit doing this step. I was not as studious as I thought I was going to be. You know, I was actually going to college at the time at TCC, taking some classes, and I found it easier to do that homework and go to those classes than it was to do this. I found it hard to find the time to do it because I just didn't want to do it. I found that I didn't want to do it because I'm pretty lazy when it comes to stuff like that. And, you know, after having done it, I learned quite a bit about who I was. And that's all I have to say about that paragraph. Thanks.
Thank you. Steve?
My name is Steve Rocha, and I am an alcoholic.
Steve.
I also happen to be a member of the Into Action group, which meets in Suffolk on Tuesday nights at Glebe Episcopal Church. And my sobriety date is November the 3rd, 1992. So we start, next we launch out on vigorous course of action right after step three. So after step three, there's no pause, go take a break, go pray on this. One of the things that I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is that it's continual action. It's just keep moving. I got to keep moving. And one of the way it was told to me years and years ago was, the question was asked, how do you know if you've done a thorough third step? Well, it's simple. The notebook and the pen magically appear because then I'm ready to do my fourth step. I don't have to go home and think about it. And I'll wait till we get to the rest of it to comment any further. Thank you.
Okay. So we'll continue on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed the people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found that it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each of our injuries. Did I read that right? On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? Okay.
So when Steve mentioned the notebook and the pen suddenly appear, that's exactly what happened. My sponsor handed me a notebook and a pencil. It might have been a pen, I can't remember. But from the start, it was kind of like, hey, start writing down some names of people that you're angry with, you know? And that first column were the names, and that was pretty simply put. And yet I still I took my time doing that. I didn't tackle it with as much vigor as I had in the beginning. Over some time, my sponsor was like, "Hey, how's that list going?" I'm like, "It's coming. It's going." And after. See, me, if I have something hanging over my head that I know I got to get done, it starts to wear me down. It starts to make me irritable. angry. It starts to make me feel uneasy. And it affects my home life too, it affects my job, it affects everything around me. So finally, I really did sit down and I really did tackle, just get down the names. Let's just do that. It's simple, I know there's gonna be more, but as long as I write down these names, I can. That's a good starting point. And soon enough, those names started to fill up. I would leave, I think, like four lines between each name. That's what I was instructed that I'd do. And the what I thought was the number one offender was I thought that I needed to write my own name down there. That was the one thing that really stuck out in my mind. I was like, I can't wait to write my own name, because I had a lot of resentment towards myself. And so when I asked my sponsor that, he said, "No, you don't need to do that." And as we go further in the reading, just like as I went further in my list down more columns, I realized I was going to be all over this page. I didn't have to actually write my name. And that was, you know, that was a simple start, and I finally got those names down and then moved on. That's all I got.
In one of the preceding chapters, it talks about the main purpose of the book. The main purpose of the book is to help me find a power greater than myself that will solve my problem. Singular problem, singular solution. My problem is I suffer from untreated alcoholism. And the solution is to develop a personal relationship with the God of my understanding that can take that away from me. And so the whole inventory process is to help me get all the garbage out of my life so that the miracle of recovery, that God's grace can come into my life and take effect. This is all it's about. The whole purpose of doing the inventory is to learn how to take an inventory. So whenever something comes up later on down the line, I can take a look at it and say, all right, well, this is what I did. This is how they reacted. This is the cause. Da, 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 da. And that's the whole purpose of the inventory, is to learn how to look at myself from a different perspective. Because I always saw myself as the victim. They did it to me. They screwed me over again. Da, 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 whatever. Fill in the blank. And this teaches me that I'm the cause of the problem. It's never them, it's always me. It says, resentment is the number one offender. Destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Don't say it kills us, it destroys us, because it's spiritual disease. And I didn't know any of this stuff before I got sober. It says, when a spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I was one of the guys, I procrastinated for a couple of years before I really got into the book. My first four step that I took, I was like, I don't know, maybe 4 months sober, and it didn't look anything like the description in the book here. I just wrote down a list of all the bad things I'd ever done in my life, and I told my sponsor, because drinking and infidelity go hand in hand for me. I don't do one without the other. And I was getting ready to do it again, and I was cohabitating with this young lady, and we had a newborn child, and I was getting ready, I was going back to my old ways again. And I'd been not drinking and coming back into AA again for almost 4 months. And that imperious urge that the book talks about was kicking in again. And I knew I had to do something different, because I know what happens. Once that infidelity touches off, man, the drinking, and then all the other stuff that goes with it. And so I did this just because I didn't want to drink again. It's the only reason I did it. Not because I wanted to get sober, get spiritual, or anything else. I just didn't want to drink again. So we sat in my sponsor's car. It was 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was. And it was perfect. It's exactly what I needed to do to get me over the hump, until I finally moved to Virginia and I got a sponsor that was a big book guy, and he gave me the keys to the kingdom. He taught me how to apply these principles, these steps, how to apply them in my life, and most importantly, how to teach them to the next guy. And so by doing this, and further on, we read that we have just begun and we have just commenced all these things. So when I got with Bill as my sponsor, and he says, we'll make a list of all your resentments. Well, by then, you know, I'm like 3.5 years sober. Well, Bill, you know, I'm resentful at my wife, maybe my kids, my mom, my dad, but that's pretty much it. You know, because now all that stuff's tampered down, and I fall under the illusion that I'm a good guy because I haven't had a drink in 3.5 years, and I've got no more resentments. I'm cool now, and that's not the case. So it's been my experience that the longer it takes to get us to this part, the more difficult it is, because I convince myself that I don't have that problem. You guys, I can clearly see it in your life, but I don't see it in my life. And that's one of the difficulties, man. And I got to tell you, the longer I stay sober, the easier it is for me to fool myself into thinking that that's not the problem. They clearly did something to offend me. But the reality is that if I could stand back for just a second and take an objective view of what's going on in my life, I can see where I put myself in a position to be hurt. But unless I learn how to do this, I'll never get to that point. Thank you.
All right, we're going to continue on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
Okay. When it came down to the second column, the cause, which is somewhat of in this paragraph here, that was pretty easy for me to fill out because I already had the names down. And as I was filling these out, it really, it said that we were burned up. I started to feel that burning up. I started to feel this rush of anger start to come back into my life. And because there's a lot of stuff that I had forgotten. And I found that looking at those things again, I didn't want to. But I also realized after reading this paragraph that I wasn't really winning any of those at all. And I never felt like I had triumphed. I felt like I lost all of those arguments, all of those things that happened between me and those people. I felt like they always had the upper hand and they won, you know? So me, I'm a revenge guy. Sometimes I don't actually do the revenge, but I think about it and I think about how I'm going to get revenge. And after writing all this stuff down, I'm like, oh yeah, I was going to go pop that guy's tire. You know, I'm just a sneaky, you know, coward. I'm a sneaky little coward. So I never really felt moments of triumph, even in the midst of all that. That's all I got. Thanks.
Are we reading the next paragraph?
We will after
you. I'll pass.
You want to pass?
Yeah, okay.
Wait
till the next one.
We'll continue on page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. You like that one, Steve?
I love that one. That's a clear descriptor of my life. So I'm 3.5 years sober. My life is on the upswing. My wife and I were expecting our second child. We just bought our first house, and we started this little construction company. So on the outside, things were on the upswing, but I was miserable because I hadn't taken the steps. I hadn't had a spiritual awakening. I didn't make any amends to speak. So things inside, that spiritual disease was eating me alive. And I called Bill, and I said, Bill, and I told him all this stuff. And he started laughing on the phone. He said, Steve, alcoholics can't stand prosperity. He said, bring your big book and come on over. So I did, and we sat at his table, and he explained this to me. And when we got to this part of the step, so I know what deep resentment, how it leads only to futility and unhappiness in my life. I've sponsored enough men and done enough fourth and fifth sets with other guys to know how it affects us. And the worst part about it all is I don't usually see it until it's too late. I don't usually see that spiritual disease until it's consuming to a point. The last time I went through this, I was 18 years sober, and maybe 19, and it got so bad that I was planning on killing myself. I love my wife so much that I don't want to shoot myself or hang myself in our house so she doesn't have to clean up after me kind of deal. But I don't love her so much that I'm not going to take my life. So I'm planning. I spent a lot of time devising a way to tie the anchor around my ankle and sink my boat in Chesapeake Bay. It took a lot of thought and a lot of effort on my part to come up with a plan for that. Obviously, I didn't do it. But that's how. So what we just read. We find that it's fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. So I go stark raving crazy first and then I start drinking. I was under the impression that we just stop and start drinking again. And that's not the way it worked for me. I was on my way to start drinking again. But luckily, I can't remember what the catalyst was this time, that I just paused. Sharon and I were talking about it before the meeting. I remember I was on my knees because my wife and I, we went through a series of life-altering crises. There was like 6 or 7 of them, major things that happened in our lives. And I wasn't as spiritually fit as I thought I was. I just wasn't. And I remember my spot, Bob's telling me, he says, Steve, that's 2. Be careful, because if it's 3, you're in a danger zone. And then it was 4, and then it was 5. And by then, I'm not even calling my sponsor anymore. But I'm still praying in the morning. I know this. So the one thing I kept doing is I didn't stop praying. And I remember I got on my knees, and I was like, F you, God, this is all your fault. Da-da-da-da-da, I'm blaming God. And I'm cussing at God. You know, and I'm probably one of the most anti-religious, anti-Jesus guys that came into Alcoholics Anonymous when I got here. I don't know anybody who's more anti-religion than I was. And luckily, by taking the process of going through the steps and getting rid of all the stuff, I was able to become open-minded on these spiritual matters. So that's the whole purpose of the steps, is to get all that garbage out of the way so that God can come into my life. And as I'm doing this, and I'm cussing at God, and guess what? Things got worse after that. And it's probably another week or two before I got on my knees again, and I said, all right, I surrender. I give up. And I went to a meeting that night, and I joined the home group and got back on the horse. And I know when all else fails, go back to basics. Get a coffee commitment, get back to the home group, and get a new guy in my car and give him a ride. I can't tell you how many times that's worked for me. Get a coffee commitment and get a new guy in my car. That's as easy as it gets. So luckily, by Bill teaching me how to do this, that I get to see this now. I get to look back in my life and identify where I've gotten off track. But if I don't do this process, I just think it's them. I think, oh, she did it again, or he did it, or whatever. You know, it's my boss, or what. It's always somebody else, but it's never what I've done. And I put myself in a position to be hurt because, number one, I'd slacked off on my spiritual program. I wasn't doing all the things that I was taught to do. It's a gradual thing that just happens. It didn't happen overnight, but over a period of time, it was major. And so when these crises came into my life, I didn't have the armor, if you will, the spiritual armor, to withstand it, and it got the best of me. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
So he highlighted the fatality of not having the maintenance and the growth in my spiritual experience. This business of resentment is infinitely grave. If I, you know, I learned early on in this book, before I got to this, that if I think it's step 3, if I don't make a decision, then I'm going to die an alcoholic death. So this just re-highlights that fact, that if I don't do, all the steps, if I don't do all these things that are suggested that I do, then I'm going to die an alcoholic death. I'm going to go back and drink. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. That fatal word kind of goes back to how vital and crucial this step is, and the other strong words that we read, that I need to take vigorous action against the fatality of my alcoholism. when I decided to get a sponsor, I hadn't had a drink in 2 years. I was going to meetings here and there. I had a sponsor. It wasn't very effective for me. But then again, I don't think I was very honest with that gentleman. So how could he be effective if I wasn't very honest? I had just gotten married. We were pregnant. I was going to school. I was changing careers. Just bought a house. I don't know if I mentioned that too. But all these things were happening. And I hadn't had a drink in 2 years. And I had several violent episodes with my wife. And I hadn't had a drink in 2 years. And I the last one I had before I got my sponsor, it woke me up. Something happened. I couldn't figure out why I was still discontent, irritable, angry. And I never thought I would be that guy that would ever do that to a woman, let alone my own wife. And when that episode happened, I realized that there's something sick about me. There's something that I'm not getting. And I had never done a full 12-step process at that point. So I made the decision that I was going to find a sponsor. I had just moved, so I lost track of the other sponsor that was in Virginia Beach. And I was like, I got to find somebody to walk me through the steps, show me how to do this, because I'm not right. I hadn't had a drink in 2 years, and yet I'm miserable. So being fatal, I was homicidal and suicidal, and I hadn't had a drink. And I'm glad that I have done this step, because it's shown me how to address future issues that I have too. Future resentments that might come up. I can go back to this tool. I'm in the HVAC industry. This is, the wrench for me, because I can go back and I can figure out why I was angry, and then I can go through the same process. I can just go back down to the end of my list, add the name, and move forward. Because if I don't continue to do that, then the insanity of alcohol will return, and I'm probably going to drink again. I was white knuckling it for 2 years, and this is something that I've been able to use, where, I still have to grip kind of hard here and there, but the white knuckling isn't as bad. So thanks.
Okay. We're going to continue on page 66. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. That we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Steve?
So, we turn back to Liz for how the key to the future. So if I don't have this, I don't have a key to the future. And this is why I think it's imperative that I find somebody that can take me to the book, to the steps out of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We got a faction out there in Suffolk that use a guide somebody made up. It's like 175 questions, and it deals with like when the first time you saw your parents naked and all this crazy stuff, but it has no correlation, so you can't use it in conjunction with this. And so And I have a copy of it at my house. The guy, one of the guys, sent it to me. He's gracious enough to let me look at it, because I thought maybe there's something there we can use, but I just didn't see anything there. I don't see how we can use it in conjunction with what we're doing here. So, by this point, so I've got the three columns, and then the end of what David read was the fourth column, and then the next paragraph was the fifth column. This is just the way I was taught to do it, not the only way to do it. There's a million ways to do this. The important thing is that I do it. That's the critical part of the whole deal. So as an example, my first inventory was just, you know, all the bad. It was really just a confessional, is really what it was. All the bad things I had done in my life. But that was enough at the time. That was the best I could do at the time. And then when God put a man in my life that could guide me through this, I was ready. So at the end of the day, in step one, I have to concede to my inner self that I'm really truly an alcoholic. I have to drink enough and suffer enough that I'm ready to surrender. Because if I don't surrender, I'm not going to do the rest of it. In step two, I came to believe that Alcoholics Anonymous could restore me to sanity. I just knew there was something. I'd been in AA enough times, but then I just knew you guys had something here. I didn't know what the heck it was, but I knew there's something here, and I knew you guys could help me. And in step three, I made a decision to turn my thinking and my actions over to care of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the best I could do. I had no concept of God at that point. And, you know, and I grew up in a religious household as a child, but I just turned my back on all that stuff. So I have to go through all of that to get to this point, because I have to have a compelling enough reason to want to do this. There's this self-examination that's going back to my life, because a lot of times I think, man, why bring that up? It's been so long. Why dredge that up all over again? But if I don't talk to somebody else about what I've done, then the chances are I'm either likely to drink again or likely to repeat that behavior. And this is all about changing my behavior. And so when I get to this point, so I'm one of the guys, my sponsor and I, when we got done with my fourth step, we didn't go burn it in the backyard. I know some people do, and I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not making fun. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's not what we did. My sponsor said, all right, now get your list out. And when we got to step eight, he said, break the list back out. Because now we're going to start working off the list. And gratefully, he was able to tell me which people that were on the list that I owed an amend to. There were some that I didn't. There were some that would just imagine amends in my mind, especially the old girlfriends. I wanted to make amends to all of them, but he said, no, you're leaving all of them alone. And so that's why I need somebody that knows how to do this. I had the good fortune of talking to a young man recently who was just, he went out and made his first amend. And his sponsor, for some unknown reason, told him it was okay to make amends to his first sponsor. And so he goes to make amends to this guy, and this guy chews him out, calls him a piece of crap, and just as horrible of an experience as you can think of. First amend right out of the gate to his ex-sponsor, and it went south quickly. It went sideways, as bad as it could be. And he called me after the fact, and I was like, well, first of all, old sponsors, they don't get amends. They're just doing their job. My job is to help as many men as possible. And if you don't get it, okay, I understand. Next. You know, that's the way I was treated in AA. I got enough white chips that I've had so many sponsors. They're like, oh, here he comes again. You know, he's going to ask me again. And so I get it. That's my job. Well, I don't get an amend just because some guy got drunk again or it didn't make it or whatever. And so luckily I was able to talk with this guy and tell him, that's not what we do. Here's what you should have done. The guy doesn't deserve it. He didn't need an amend. The amend that we make is what we call the living amend. Just behave better. Be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But if I don't have somebody in my life that's guiding me down this process, the other important part about this is what I have written in my book. I call it the angry prayer. It takes a lot of practice. I don't say I still do it every time when I get mad at somebody today. I just don't. But when I can pause, when I'm agitated or doubtful, a lot of the stuff can come back into light. But when I'm fired up and the adrenaline's pumping, I don't remember a lot of this stuff. Just I'm sure you guys do, but I don't. So this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? That's the prayer. I'm asking God. I'm inviting God into my life. Help me look at this problem. This guy's sick. How can I be helpful to him? Why? Because he did something that offended me, pissed, or did whatever. Got me all worked up about something. But if and so part of the inventory process is, if I can take an objective look at my life, I can see where my part of it was. Well, there's a story in here about we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate, seemingly without provocation. But I can invariably at some time in the past see where I put myself in a position to be hurt. That literally, to the letter, happened to me at a meeting. I stepped on some guy's shoes. He had white shoes, brand new shoes, and me thinking like we're in high school again because I'm too cool, and I stepped on the guy's shoes, and he was hot, man. I stepped on our toes of my fellows, and he retaliated. He grabbed me in front of everybody. He grabbed me and said, man, what the hell's wrong with you? And then he let me go, and he said, ah, just kidding. But by then, I was humiliated in front of my peers. And I was hot, man. And I'm thinking, I'm going to shoot this guy after the meeting. I'm just going to shoot him right in the head, you know, because that's where my mind goes. And luckily, because I already been through the process, I was able to see that I did that. He didn't do nothing. He would have never grabbed me if I hadn't done that to him. So this is all this whole exercise is just helping me look at my behavior. What am I doing to hurt other people, to put me in a position to be hurt? Because then I get to play the victim. I called my sponsor one time, I was complaining about my wife, and as I used to do a lot of, and he said, I'll never forget this. He said, Steve, you really do make a good victim, don't you? I said, yeah, I kind of do, don't I? We got a good laugh out of it. Because I love to portray myself as a victim. Because what it does is it absolves me from any responsibility. And that's ultimately what I want. I don't want to be held responsible for what I'm doing. So if I paint myself as a victim, I'm not responsible. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
These few paragraphs here were very important for me to focus on because... You know, I'm a very angry individual at times. I've got some anger issues. And I don't know if we're not going to really get into it tonight, I think, you know, but a lot of that stemmed from my own fears. I always thought everything stemmed from love and anger. And what I was taught through this process was I had to look at my fears. I'm the type of guy, when I get fearful, there's only been one time where I was so fearful that I was paralyzed, I couldn't move. But other than that, my fear was always, I always combated fear with anger. And those things that affected me were my pride. I don't like to be dominated. Says here, people really dominated us. I don't like that. I don't like the world. I always feel like the world's trying to scam me, too. I can be very paranoid. I always think there's always an angle that somebody has, you know, trying to get at me. So I'm very defensive in that way, and that's an irrational fear. Through going through this process, I realized that I have a lot of irrational fears. If I wasn't going to go through this process, I can already tell you, you know, I wouldn't be married today. I wouldn't have my daughter in my life. I wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't have taken much longer before, something horrible would have happened, I think. And this angry prayer in here, I'm not good at that because sometimes it doesn't take much for me to feel it. So what I have to do is I have to take myself out of the situation. Sometimes I have to leave the house. Sometimes I have to leave the work site, you know, because I also like to kick inanimate objects too. And that happens a lot. So I cause more damage to the machine I'm actually working on, you know. And so it was also told me, don't take the bait. And that's really stuck in my mind because, you know, it says here that a lot of these people that we get in arguments with are sick as well. And so if they're just as sick as me, they're going to say the things that they know are going to bait me. They know they're going to affect me in a way, you know. There's a lot of people that are close to me just know how to push my buttons. And so instead of taking that bait, I can leave the situation. I can call my sponsor. I can call another alcoholic. It doesn't have to be my sponsor. That's why getting phone numbers, building my network of AA people is really important. because we all have jobs, we all have things going on in our lives. So it's very useful to have that network. And it, I don't normally say this, but when I get a phone number, I always put AA in the beginning of the name, so it populates all my AA people right at the front. It's very useful for me, because before it was just your first name, Chris. A lot of Chris's in there. Now I got to go back, call these guys up, hey, what's your last name? So I learned to put AA in the beginning. That way I have all the people that I know that I need to call right up front. It says here, we avoid retaliation or argument. I just got in an argument with my wife yesterday about what an argument actually means. Because I took a philosophy class one day in college. Right? Well, I did finish it, but argument, like you learn that, you know, argument isn't always retaliation, like right there. But when she said that we weren't arguing, and I said, we are arguing, it actually ended up to be her version of argument. And then that's when I become susceptible and vulnerable to retaliate, because I have fear and I like to defense, and I also like to be offensive and strike verbally, you know. I went through some therapy, and this therapist was very instrumental in helping me to develop other tools to help avoiding a position to be in a position where I'm retaliating or being in an argument. And a lot of those things that I learned from her, I found very useful. One of which was, you know, being sarcastic. Me and my wife, we like to be sarcastic with one another. And I want to say maybe 75% of the time, when we get into those sarcastic moments, they sometimes, 75% of the time, lead into an argument. So we try to steer clear of that. And, you know, realizing that my wife and other people in my life, they have their things that they're going through too, isn't always at the forefront of my mind. But it's helpful to, as I'm sponsoring other people, as I go through the 12 steps over again, I'm reminded of all these paragraphs. I'm reminded of all these things. So, thank you.
Thanks. Our final paragraph tonight is on page 67. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Steve?
So column four, the way I was taught, it says, was I. Column four, so it says, where I've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And column five is my fault. So in a situation I've been where we tried to disregard, where by when we saw our faults, we listed them in black and white. And one of the important elements to doing this inventory is it has to be handwritten. No computer stuff, no printouts, no, because that sanitizes it too much. And I did it with a pen. My sponsor said, do it with a pen just so you can't erase anything. If you write it down, leave it down. And that's what I went with. And so, again, this whole exercise is to teach me how to look at myself from a different point of view, because I'm not the victim. And nine times out of ten, I am the aggressor in almost everything that happened. And so it says in the previous paragraph, since we're going to run out of time. This is the last we're reading, David?
Yes, sir.
All right, so I'm going to fast forward to page 70. It says, We have commenced, so we have elicited an analysis of resentment. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. So I've just begun this process, and I've just commenced to see how terribly destructive all these things are in my life. This is an ongoing process for me. I'm not one of the guys, I'm not a let's go work the 12 steps in a weekend guy. It's not the way I got sober. I know some people do that, and it works for them, and have at it. I truly believe that the way that we do it, typically when a guy comes in and he's ready to get busy, usually by the time he's picking up his 1 year medallion, he's about halfway done with his 9-step. Somewhere in the middle of his amends, somewhere around there. That's usually the timeline. And I think that's relatively simple because I have to do this and I have to live this in order for me to see that it's really going to work. I can do this on a weekend. It's kind of like one of those self-help workshops and go home and feel great, but not really understand what it means. I need to see how I can put this into practical application in my life. And the easiest place for me to do this is at home because I have more arguments at home than anywhere else. I don't usually argue with people at work because I'm usually the guy in charge. I don't usually argue with people in AA because we're all pretty much on our best behavior when we come here. We all want to look good. We all want people to think highly of us. So very few of us actually go out now, unless, you know, living with untreated alcoholism, we're going out and start arguments with other people. So really it's at home where I get to practice these principles, where it gets the I get the most use of the program is at home. And so in my case, until my family gets to see some tangible results of my participation in Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't really get on board with it. Once my wife saw, and I was very blessed that the first 10 years I was sober, my wife just said, go, get out of here. I was screwed up, man. I was a screwed up individual when I got here. There was a lot of, I was the most flawed individual I've met in AA since I got sober. And gratefully, she recognized that. And she said, go, these people are help. Something's working, just go keep doing it. And she took care of the kids and did all the things. And we made an agreement that I would be the provider for the family. She would stay home and take care of the family. And it seemed to work for us. And because she allowed me to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to immerse myself in this deal. And I went to meetings all the time. I got involved in service. And I'm not one of the guys, and I'm not an advocate that service to keep you sober. Service will keep you busy, or keep me busy, but service ain't gonna keep me sober. It's the process of going through the steps, it's developing a personal relationship with the God of my understanding, and it's going out and making amends and having that spiritual awakening. That's what keeps me sober. Service can keep me busy, but I don't think it's gonna keep me sober. Mm. And so when I learned to start practicing this, because it takes a while, just because I say, all right, God, I'm ready for you to relieve me of all my defects of character, it doesn't go away. Like it doesn't happen like that in my life. Maybe it happens like that for you guys, but it didn't happen like that for me. And I have to continually work at this deal. And it just takes, it took a long time for this alcoholic. My true spiritual awakening happened when I was about 10 years sober. And I had done a lot of work in AA. I'd done a lot of step work. I made a lot of amends. I did a lot of prayer. But I had so much garbage, so much baggage that I came in with. It just took that long for me. It doesn't take that long for most of you. I know that. I'm a slow learner, and it just took a long time. But when it happened, it was miraculous, man. I remember it like it was yesterday. And it was an incredible experience. And I'm grateful that I had that. And my job is to come here and tell you guys that if you do this, you can have the same experience, if not something better. Why can't you? If a schmuck like me, I'm a low-bottom, violent, blackout, drinking, gutter drunk. I had nothing. I accomplished nothing before I got sober. I had nothing to speak of, nowhere to stand in society. And you guys took me from that to where I am today. I'm not saying I'm something today, but I'm certainly not the guy that walked in here 27 years ago. And I owe that to you guys. And by continually trying to practice this, and for me, the number one thing for guys like me is that I have to stay engaged by sponsoring other men. It ain't getting involved in the district. It ain't getting involved in intergroup. That's all important stuff. And it's one of the spokes in the wheel, but it's not the important spoke. The most important spoke in my wheel is 12-step work. Because that's what keeps me involved in the process, and it keeps a new guy across the table from me. We get two big books between us, and that's where the miracle happens. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
So I was talking about earlier about putting my name down on that list of names. This is where I came in. And if I didn't have a sponsor, I would have put my name down there. If I didn't have a sponsor, if I didn't have somebody who had done this before, I wouldn't have known to draw the columns. I would have probably drawn maybe three, but then I didn't know that these were also columns in here. I wouldn't have known that I was going to be all over this page eventually, or all over my my list. When I got to column four and I started to put down where I'd been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, that was kind of hard for me to like decipher which one was which, which one of these words applied to this situation. And so I pretty much just pencil whipped it. I was like, oh yeah, I'm definitely selfish there. I'm selfish there too. I wrote selfish a lot because I knew, you know, and then every once in a while I'm like, oh yeah, I was dishonest there. So I was kind of, I was just filling it in, you know. And you can tell where I had written originally, and then you could tell what was added after I went through it with my sponsor. And my sponsor helped pinpoint other areas where I had been at fault. Also, when I was to when I wrote down a description of those faults in sentence form, you could also tell where I had written down and then where my sponsor said, yeah, what about this too? And having that second opinion from somebody with experience in this, it didn't cut me any slack. It was thorough. And after having gone through that with the sponsor, I started to see things, how they were lining up. I started to see that there was a process here. I started to see that there was, it was organized, you know, because all this was inside my head. All this was my spiritual malady, and I was able to put it down on a piece of paper. And I was actually, it flowed. And I was able to decipher what was going on inside of me. I got a lot of things from my past that I carried with me. You know, I was in Afghanistan for a year. There's some things in there. I was mad at the entire Air Force. I was angry at the entire Air Force, which going through the process was kind of an irrational resentment. Because I was the one who ended my career in the way in which it ended, which was not amicable. It's not how I saw myself ending my career. So there's always more to be added here. I don't look forward to having to use the list again, but I look forward to having the opportunity to use it instead of white knuckling my situations that I come across. I look forward to being able to put pen to paper, write it down, go through the columns, call up my sponsor, and then inevitably he's like, yeah, why don't you add this too? So, thanks for sharing.
Thank you. All right, we are going to pass the seven tradition basket. Does anybody see it?
May I add one more thing, David?
Oh, please.
One of the things to keep in mind is that the grudge list is the first of three phases of the inventory process. There's a grudge list, a fears list, and a sexual relations list. And I didn't know that. Luckily, my sponsor explained all that to me. And the importance of each one, and hopefully, well, I'm sure you next week, you guys going to the fears, right?
Fear and sex.
Yeah.
Fear and sex.
Fear and sex, right? Can't go wrong with that.
You want to come back?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you, guys. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential At every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Your safety is important. Calling the proper authorities does not go against any AA traditions and is recommended when someone may have broken the law or endangered the safety of another person. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Steve?
The last Wednesday of this month, the Suffolk Southside group is celebrating their 40th anniversary or something like that, and Bob Edwards from Gloucester, Virginia is going to be the speaker. The eating starts at 6:30, speaker at 8 o'clock, I believe.
All right. Jake?
Jake Alcoholic. Into action meeting tomorrow. We have a speaker. Her name is Sarah W. out of Sick and Twisted. Starts at 8 o'clock if you want to show up. Thanks.
All right. Foy.
Foy, Alcoholic.
Hi, Foy.
January 31st, Friday at 6:30, my home group Candlelight, our home group Candlelight, is having a speaker meeting, an eating meeting, and a speaker meeting. Also, eating starts at 6:30, and the speaker is Patrick. I cannot remember his last initial, but he's a wonderful speaker, very colorful. So that's Friday, January 31st, 6:30 for eating, and 8 o'clock for
Patrick L.
Yes, Patrick L.
All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our humble little home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members. Newcomers, you're the reason we're here. Is there anybody here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name.
Isaac Alcoholic.
Isaac! Welcome. Welcome.
Hey,
Anthony,
hey,
hey, welcome.
Here.
Marquise, welcome.
Welcome.
Anybody else? There's literature available over that way. Please see a home group member if you'd like to purchase a book. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after the meeting. Please feel free to come and talk to me. Smokers, please use the butt can. It's not a butt can. It's a little paper bowl with water in it. But throw your butts in there and we'll take care of them after the meeting. Also, stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, could we please thank the panel again? Thank the crew that set up the meeting, and thank everyone who participated. All are invited, after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting. Yay! Which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay. Can I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs? Sharon, BJ.
My name is BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm BJ.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Shall we circle up?
Deliver us from evil, for thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,